Morning. Chuck texted me this morning. He's out of town for families, Christmas, all that stuff. And he texted me this morning. He said, "Hey, I'm praying for you this morning." And I just thought I'd have a little fun with him. I texted him back and said, "Was that today?" Yeah, I gave him a little bit of a heart attack in the morning, you know, since he's away. This morning, we're going to be kind of jumping around a couple of different stories throughout the New Testament. And I wanted to start by just saying, if you look at something the wrong way, sometimes you just can get yourself into some trouble. Let me illustrate that. When I was in college, a buddy of mine from college, we lived about 10 miles apart here in Indiana, so we would carpool some weekends when we drive back and forth. And one Monday morning, we decided to get, you know, we're getting ready to go back to college, because at Johnson Bible College, you get Mondays off. So if you're thinking of a good place to go to college, Monday mornings you get to sleep in, so that's a good choice. So we travel on Mondays, and we thought, what sounds better for a road trip, 4 hours in the car, than White Castle? So we stop at White Castle, and we get lunch, and we get our sack, and we pull out of the White Castle, and we get stuck in traffic. And we're back behind this semi, and we can't see anything on either side, and we just think, wow, something's going on up there. Must be a wreck. Something's going on. So we just start eating our White Castles and talking and having a good time and just living it up. And 5 minutes go by. Wow, we haven't even moved an inch. 10 minutes go by. We still haven't moved. Close to 15 minutes go by, and we're really starting to wonder, what is going on? I can't really see anything. We're just too caught up in our White Castles there. About 15 minutes into that, this guy walks out of White Castle, sits right there on the highway. Guy walks out of White Castle across the parking lot, walks right in front of my car and looks at me like I'm an idiot, gets into his semi and pulls off. We were parked in the emergency lane the whole time, not realizing traffic was buzzing by on the left. We were just too consumed in our White Castles. But if you look at things the wrong way, you can get yourself into some trouble. We didn't get ourselves into a lot of trouble there, but it took us a little bit longer to get back to campus than it usually would. If you look at God in certain ways, you can get yourself into some trouble. All of us have the tendency to look at God in one of a few different ways. For instance, maybe you look at God like he's the generous grandfather, a really, really kind grandfather. You're going to think you can get away with anything. You can go to, you know that's true, you can go to your grandfather, you can stomp on his toes, you can spank his cat, you can key his car, you know, whatever you want to do, and what's grandpa going to do? He's going to love you, he's going to hug you, he's going to kiss you, and he's going to send the bill to your dad, you know, it's whatever you did. But that's grandfather, that's grandpa, you know. If you look at God as a generous grandfather, you're going to think you can get away with anything. But maybe you look at God like he's this authoritarian figure. A lot of people do that. You'll think that God is sitting on the edge of life, just waiting to smash your head in with the least mistake. He just enjoys doing this. When you make mistakes, here's this God with all this power and with all this authority, and he's just waiting for you to mess up. Maybe you view God that way. Now, you might respect God if you view him that way, but you're not going to want to spend a whole lot of time with him. If you view God as the grandfather, you're going to spend a lot of time with him, but you're not going to respect him when it's time to bring the gavel down. So if you view God as an authoritarian, you might respect him, but you don't want to spend much time with him. If you view God as a grandfather, you want to spend a lot of time with him, but you're not going to respect him a whole lot. So maybe there's another option here. Some people view God as primarily a king. And so they think to themselves of a servant-master type relationship. And some people think of God like he's their pal, he's their buddy, he's their friend, and so we just want to hang out a little bit from time to time. And the truth is, all of those things are true, but they have to be true altogether. They have to be true altogether, because God is really, really amazing in his complexity. If you look at God only through one of those lenses, if you look at God the wrong way, you're going to live your life the wrong way. But if you look at God and all of his complexity, every single day you're going to turn a new page on who God is. Now, I say that because we don't have time this morning to talk all about who God is. And if Chuck started a sermon series next week, and he said for the next 3 years we're going to spend time learning about who God is, it won't be enough time. And so I'm not going to deal with that this morning. Instead, I'm going to talk about something different. Instead of, if we went through a sermon series of who God is, at the end of that sermon series, we would know who God is. What does that mean to us? We kind of have that knowledge. So this morning, I just want to talk about what God thinks about you. Because while it's hard to get your head around who God is, it's not that hard to get your head around what He thinks about you. So my sermon this morning, I only have one point. It doesn't mean we're going to be out of here in 5 minutes. It just means I have one point. And that point is in your bulletin. The bulletin's full of stuff. Don't get worried. I'm not going to, you know, go through all of that stuff. But that's for you to take home. That's for you to kind of look through this week. But I only have really one point this morning, and here it is. God believes in you more than you think. And God's plan for you is bigger than you believe. So in your bulletin, you got your point right there. If you find that, say that with me real quick. God believes in you more than you think, and God's plan for you is bigger than you believe. That is true. Every story in the Bible, every person in the Bible is that story. Every person that you come in contact with is that story. But I want to use a couple of biblical examples to help me make this point this morning, okay? And I'll tell you why I use these two. These two examples are used for two reasons. Number one, they're really popular, really famous. And if you came into church this morning and you haven't been to church ever, you probably still know who Peter and Paul are. And so I want to use those two examples because everybody can kind of relate. You know who Peter and Paul are. And the second reason is because they were the least likely people to do what they did. Nobody in this room, this is the end of the sermon here, okay? Don't walk out, but the end of the sermon is nobody in this room has a better excuse than Peter or Paul to think that God doesn't have a plan for them or that God doesn't believe in them. I want to start with Peter real quick. Peter was a failure in a lot of ways. Now, you don't think of Peter as a failure. You think of Peter as St. Peter, the one waiting at the pearly gates, you know, the one ready to let you in. And the Catholics view him as the first pope. And we just see him as the star of the New Testament. You know, he's all throughout there. But Peter failed badly quite often. The Bible is filled with a lot of really real people. God didn't pick a bunch of superhumans to do the work that he's doing. God didn't pick all the greatest of the greats. You know, He picked regular people with potential, but also with a lot of problems. And if we divide the life of Peter up into a couple of scenes, if we divide his life into four different scenes here this morning, you're going to notice that when God called Peter, He called him knowing his potential, but He also called him knowing his problems. So if you've never spent time in church, today's your first time, or maybe it's your first time that you've been in church in a long time, and maybe you come all the time, but you just don't know a lot about Peter or Paul or anybody else in the Bible, you are kind of at an advantage this morning. And I'll tell you why. If you come to church all the time, you know all the stories, you tend to look at those people on a pedestal. You kind of look at through their triumphant lenses. Peter, the great Peter, Paul, wow, if I could just be like Paul. But if you don't really know them, you're going to be able to relate to more of what I'm trying to say. So if you know all these stories and you know these people, you're going to be a little bit more of a disadvantage. You're going to have to work a little bit harder to get what I'm saying this morning. Because the Bible's filled with real people. They have real challenges like you do. They have real weaknesses like I do. And they're just like you and me. When Jesus picked his apostles, when he went and picked his disciples, he didn't get stuck with them. In the NFL draft, the last pick of the seventh round, what do they call that guy? Anybody know? NFL player? Not usually. Mr. Irrelevant is what they call him. Mr. Irrelevant. Nobody here is. The team got unlucky enough to have that last pick, and they got stuck with that draft pick. That's not Jesus here. Jesus handpicked these guys. If Jesus were picking a dream team to change the world by our standards, none of these guys would be on the team. Because, you know, not one rabbi on as a disciple, not one teacher. They were all fishermen. There was a tax collector, somebody everybody hated. People still do hate them, right? April 15th is coming. Anybody else's hard drive is going to crash right before April 15th? That's a political joke, and I'll get away. Never mind. It was a whole group of unlikely people. It was a whole group of unlikely people that Jesus used to change the world. And Peter, by the way, was the least likely of that group. Peter's someone, if you really take the time to understand his personality, if you start to really read into the scriptures and see how he acts and how he behaves, when you really start to study him, you discover what you discover about Peter is he's the type of person that really his mom only looks forward to. He doesn't think before he talks. He doesn't look before he jumps. He's the guy in the room when everybody knows, don't say anything right now. He's the guy that has his hands up, ready to talk. Peter, he's got that personality. He's got that strong personality. He becomes the leader of all the disciples. He's the guy who's overconfident. You remember the story of Jesus' arrest? When they came to arrest Jesus, what does Peter do? He pulls the sword out and cuts the guard's ear off. He's that overconfident guy, ready to take charge. Every time he appears on the scene, he takes charge of the situation, whether he was given that responsibility or he takes it upon himself. That's just his personality. So scene one, God calls Peter. And this is a good moment. Matthew was writing about this moment. He says, Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, and he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew. And he goes on to say that he told him, hey, you know, have you caught anything? Well, put your nets on the other side and you'll catch some fish. Well, Luke writes it in a little bit different perspective. I love how the Gospels, they don't contradict each other, but some of them get you a little bit more detailed than the others. Luke writes about this. He's writing the story. Jesus is on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and he's teaching. And the crowd is all around him, and he looks out, and he sees Peter and Andrew, and they're cleaning the nets from the night before, and there's a boat there, so he steps in their boat. He has them push off the bank a little bit so that people can see him, and he can teach some more. And when he's finished teaching, he says, hey, let's go out in the deep water. Let's fish a little bit. And this is where Peter says, we haven't caught anything. We've been out there all night. And Jesus says, well, let's put the nets on the other side. And Luke writes that as soon as Peter and his brother did this, did as Jesus said, they caught so many fish that they began to sink. They called in reinforcements. They got another boat out there. They started putting fish in the other boat, and both boats were having trouble getting back because they were both about to sink. And at that moment, Peter says, Jesus, you, teacher, whatever you call it, you have to get away from me because I'm a sinful, sinful man. And then Jesus says a phrase that we've all come to know. He says, Peter, why don't you follow me? And I'll make you a fisher of men. That's a common phrase Jesus used, fishers of men. It's an analogy that Jesus used to preach the gospel. But it's a weird thing to say to a fisherman. Let's go fish for people. You know, you got that nets and what are we going to do? You know, that's a weird imagery if you're Peter. But he went for it. And not only that, but this was Peter's livelihood. This is his business, and this is what he did. This is Jesus showing up at your office, at your work, when things are going well, and he says, hey, why don't you just leave all this here and come follow me around the desert for a few years, and you can preach while you're out there. It doesn't sound very appealing if you're not a preacher. He was a fisherman, and he was probably a fisherman in that period of time because he couldn't cut it as a rabbi. He wasn't the Ivy Leaguer that made it to be a rabbi. Every Jewish mom, their dream was their little boy to grow up to be a teacher of the law. And Peter was probably a fisherman because he just didn't make the cut. So Peter is probably a fisherman because his father was a fisherman. He was continuing his family business. And then Jesus shows up and says, hey, Peter, put these nets down. I'll make you fishers of men. I'll make you fish for people. And Peter drops everything and he goes with Jesus. And that's scene one. Everything looks good. His faith is there. He's full of faith. And he leaves his family business, his fishing business, and he goes to follow Jesus on this great adventure. That's scene one. Here's scene two. Peter begins to rise into leadership, and he has this great moment. Listen to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he sat his disciples down, and he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked. Who do you say that I am? And then that's when Peter spoke up. Peter replied. And again, these are real people. These are real situations. This was a real conversation that was taking place between Jesus and his disciples. And Peter answered, Jesus, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. And Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. For this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. That's a big moment for Peter. And you got to understand the dynamics that were going on here. You have these group of disciples, and again, they're not superstars, they're just people. They're just people like you and I. And Jesus asks a question. You see, a couple chapters later, we see them kind of bickering over who's going to be the greatest, who's going to sit on the right hand of God, of Jesus, on this, as he's the king. And so they're kind of going at each other. They're at odds with each other. They're human beings, like we're human beings. They're trying to get the right answer, who figure out who's the best, who's the brightest. It's disciple competition happening right now. And they're sitting around, and Jesus asks them this question: Who do people say I am? Who do you say that I am? People, you know, Thomas says you're a prophet, and maybe Andrew says no. People say that you're Elijah, and someone else, no, you're a teacher. And Peter's like, I got this. I know who you are. You're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. And Jesus points at Peter and says, you win. You win. You're right. That's exactly the right answer. And he gets a gold sticker. Remember the gold stickers? Get the gold sticker on your chest, you get the right answer. He gets the gold sticker. He's on top of the world. Jesus, in a group of his peers, Jesus says, you're right. You're absolutely right. So seeing that scene two, he's on top of the world. But you know how long that lasts? About three verses. Because about three verses later, we see scene three. From that time on, Jesus begins to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law. And you see, the disciples didn't think that that was really going to happen, because they just had this conversation, you're the Messiah. And they had a different viewpoint of what the Messiah really was. They thought he was going to be this earthly king that's going to kick Rome out and take control of Jerusalem again and restore the priesthood that become so corrupt. And so they're saying, that's right, you're the Messiah. Now let's go to Rome and let's settle this. Let's take care of this and let's get Jerusalem back. That was their mindset. You're the Messiah. And Jesus throws him a curveball here. He says, three verses later, he's saying, you're right, I'm the Messiah. So we're going to go back to Jerusalem, and they're going to kill me. That was a little bit different what they were expecting to hear. And so Peter, in verse 22, this is where his fall happens. Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him. Can you imagine rebuking Jesus? In Colossians, it says, by Jesus and in Jesus, everything was made. By Jesus and in Jesus, everything was made. I read on the internet, so you know it's true. I read one time that there's this star. I can't confirm. I'm not a scientist. But there's a star out there somewhere that's like 200, 250 million miles in diameter. I don't know if anybody can confirm that or not, but I don't know how you measure that. But if that's true, Jesus made that. And verse 22 says, Peter rebuked Jesus. He knows more than Jesus does. Peter said, never, Lord, this will never happen to you. And then Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. How do you go in three verses from gold star to being called Satan? Because he's human. Just like you're human, just like I'm human. God didn't get stuck with these disciples, though. He handpicked them, knowing their potential, but also knowing their problems. And Peter was a little bit of an arrogant one. And if you were creating the story on your own, if you were writing the story, you might end it right there and say, here's this guy, he thought he knew it all, and Jesus put him in his place, and Jesus went on to do this great thing by dying for us and resurrecting. And that would be the end of Peter's story. That would be the end of scene, that would be the end of the whole story, but that's not even the end of scene three. Scene three, you know, goes on, and Jesus later tells Peter, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter, what's he say? No, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to deny you. But what happens? He denies him three times. So you would end it right there, maybe saying, hey, this is the guy that nobody really liked in the first place, kind of falling on his face and falling on his sword. But Jesus isn't a scene three type of God. Jesus is a scene four type of God because he's going to chase after Peter. And to bring it all in here this morning, he's chasing after us. There's nobody here today that Jesus is not chasing after. Maybe you think it's all said and done and your story is over and it's been written and its chapter is ended and the book's closed. But really, it's just beginning. Peter denies Jesus three times. Jesus dies, raises from the dead. But if you read between the lines of the resurrection story in John chapter 20, you notice it's not the same Peter anymore. Peter's been humbled. Peter feels dejected. Peter feels like a failure. And I think we've all felt like a failure before. You've done something you never thought you would do. You've come to a point you never thought you would be at. And you feel like everything is done. It's finished. And the last chapter's been written and it's over. Certainly somebody in here this morning feels like a failure. And that's where Peter is right now. He's lost everything. Everything's going great. He got the gold star. And then began his downfall. But then you come to John chapter 21. Jesus has risen from the dead. The disciples are back in their home in Galilee. And they're on the sea. They're in the boats. And we don't know why. We don't know if they're running away completely. They want to give up this Jesus movement. We don't know if that's the reason. We don't know if they're just taking a break because things are pretty hot in Jerusalem. We don't know why they're there. But they're there. And Jesus shows up. It says that this guy shows up on the shore while they're in the boats. And it's the risen Jesus. We see that, but they don't see that yet. And he yells out at them. He says, hey, are you catching any fish out there? Does this conversation sound a little familiar? About 3 years ago, he had the same conversation. And they said, no, we're not catching anything. They're not coming into the nets. We can't find anything. We're not catching anything. And the guy on the shore, who they still don't know who it is, says something. He says, throw the net on the other side. And then immediately, Peter remembers that moment when God first called him. And it says that he jumped out of the boat and he swims like crazy to get to the shore. And he recognized that it's Jesus. And Jesus was giving him another chance. He's calling him again in the same way that he called him before. And you might know the story there, how it ends. Jesus says, do you love me, Peter? Three times, just to make up for those three denials. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And Peter says every time, you know that I love you. There's always a scene four with Jesus. It never ends at your lowest point. You can be a total failure. Everything can fall apart around you. And there's always another chapter with Jesus. And Peter, who desperately wants to be reconciled to Jesus, gets another chance. He jumps out of the boat. He swims the shore. And then Peter, the guy who was really rough around the edges, goes on to preach that first sermon at Pentecost in Jerusalem. 3,000 people came forward that day and joined the church. 3,000 people. Because God believed in Peter more than he thought. And God's plans for Peter was bigger than he believed. And failure was just no match for God's grace. And if that was the only story I brought up this morning, that would be enough. But that's not it. I don't have a lot of time to go into the whole story of the Apostle Paul, but I want to give you a short version of that. You see, Paul never imagined he would join Jesus' team. In Acts chapter 8, Luke writes that Paul was breathing threats against the church. Acts chapter 8, verse 3, it says, Saul began to destroy the church. Going from house to house, he dragged off both men and women. Saul was brutal. What do you think he was doing to those men and women? He was throwing them in prison. He was killing them because they had a different belief than he did. He didn't like their beliefs. Saul's brutal. Saul, in every sense of the word, Saul was a terrorist. Think about what ISIS is doing right now. What are they? They're killing people because they believe differently than what they do. What was Saul doing? He was killing people because they believed differently than he did. We don't think about that often, but Saul was a brutal, brutal man. Dragging people out of their homes. Throwing them in prison. Killing them. Not just the men, but it says the women and the daughters. Saul was absolutely killing everything, just destroying everyone involved in this Jesus movement. But God has his own plan for Saul. Scene 2 of 3 in Saul's life shows Saul destroying everything in Jerusalem, everyone in Jerusalem involved in this Jesus movement. And then he goes to the chief priests and he says, there's something like this going on in Damascus as well. And if you give me the papers of permission, I'll travel up there and I'll do the same. So he gets the permission and he starts traveling to Damascus. And then something he never expected happens. Jesus shows up on the road. Now, if you or I were Jesus, we wouldn't have dealt with Saul the way that Jesus dealt with Saul. If we came back and here's this guy killing people we love and destroying things that we've created and destroying things that we died for, we would come down in absolute force. But Jesus came down in love and grace. Jesus had a different plan for Saul. Saul was the least likely person to change the world. But Jesus knew that if he could take that ferocity with which Saul was destroying the church or trying to destroy the church and turn it into favor for the church, then Saul might have a chance to change the world. So Jesus shows up. Verse 3 says, as he nears Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell on the ground and a voice said, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And Saul said, who are you? And Jesus replied, I am Jesus, the one you're persecuting, the one you're trying to destroy. Now these are real people. And I want you to try to imagine that moment. You've been destroying these people. You've been destroying the movement. And the person that started it all shows up. You probably think you can't imagine that moment. But I want to help you for a moment. Have you ever been, talking bad about somebody behind their back? I know this isn't you, but maybe somebody you know. He's been talking bad about somebody behind their back, and then that person walks in the room and they catch you. Maybe an oops moment. I got to think it's a little bit something like that on a much grander scale. Here's Saul killing all these Christians and Jesus shows up. Maybe you know the story. Saul becomes Paul. He starts preaching. He starts traveling the world, spreading the news of Jesus, becomes a missionary. People were a little skeptical of the guy. They didn't know if he was like a Trojan horse coming in to destroy them from the inside. They didn't know what was going on. Here's this guy who was killing the church, and now he's preaching. Saul became Paul, became the writer of over half the New Testament or so, and he became this great missionary, and his life changed, and he changed the world. And I've got to think there's somebody in this room this morning that maybe you're coming to church and you don't really know why. You don't fit in. You don't think you fit in. You don't know why you're at church. You don't know why you came. And you never imagined you would be at a point in your life where you would join this Jesus movement. God's probably been writing your story differently than you ever expected Him to. And if you think you're the least likely person to join this Jesus team to change the world, you're probably the most likely person, as we see from Peter, as we see from Paul. Paul wasn't the least likely person. Paul was the most likely person. God believed in Peter more than he thought, and God's plans for Peter was greater than he ever believed, and God believed in Paul more than he thought, and God's plans for Paul was greater than he ever believed, and God believes in you more than you think. And God's plans for you are bigger and greater than you can ever imagine. And you're you have no idea what your scene for might be. And I can guarantee you, if Jesus came down right now and told you exactly what your scene for is, you wouldn't believe it. Paul wouldn't have. Peter wouldn't have. But his plan for you is bigger than you believed, and he believes in you more than you think. So we sang this song a while ago called Amazing Grace, and I think it's time that we stop questioning that grace and we just move towards our scene for.